Today, is a 5% cash rate for Australia on the cards? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, as I discussed on my live show on Tuesday night with Leif van Onselen, the RBA decided to hold the cash rate at 4.35%, but there were signs of a more hawkish tone from the meeting notes and the subsequent press conference, which I might add is becoming less useful each time, thanks to weak questions supporting weak answers. Come on, the mainstream media, do your job. Anyway, Bullock was clear that we need more data. There are risks to the upside from sticky inflation, but employment is also an important factor, given their dual mandate.
Inflation's come down a long way since it peaked in 2022, both in Australia and overseas. And part of this was the resolution of supply chain issues, which also energy prices easing, which has helped. But it also reflects the tightening of monetary policy all around the world, and that's helping to dampen demand. That said, inflation is still above central bank targets in many economies, and it is proving to be sticky. And the progress in getting inflation down has slowed, and Australia isn't any different here. So since the previous meeting, we've had March quarter national accounts, which has told us a few interesting things. First, the March quarter consumption data and upward revisions to its history mean that consumption growth's been a bit stronger than we thought, and the savings rate a bit lower. At the same time, I think you'll all remember that GDP barely grew in the quarter and consumption per capita continued to decline. We do expect that household real incomes will rise later in the year with tax cuts and lower inflation, so it is possible that consumption growth will also be a bit stronger. But we also know that many households are really feeling the impacts of high inflation and higher interest rates. And as I noted earlier, on average, households have reduced their saving rate by more than we thought to support their spending. It's tough just to keep up with essentials. Groceries, petrol, health, education, rents, insurance expenses, I could go on, they're all going up. On the other hand, while labour market conditions are quite strong, the unemployment rate published last week was at 4% for May. Employment's still growing, it's just growing a bit more slowly than it was a year or so ago. Now, this is important for the other part of our mandate, because people having jobs is critical to them being able to meet the challenges of the higher cost of living. Wages growth in the March quarter was a bit weaker than expected, and we think it's likely to have passed its peak for the current cycle, but growth of unit labour costs was still a bit high. The monthly CPI indicator for April was stronger than expected. However, there's been limited information about services inflation since the May board meeting. And this is where the most recent strength has been coming from. So really we need to get more comprehensive readings on inflation before we can get a handle on the momentum in services inflation. So what does this all mean? Well, the recent data have been mixed, but overall I think they reinforce the need to remain vigilant to the upside risks to inflation. We still think we're on the narrow path, but it does appear to be getting a bit narrower. We need a lot to go our way if we're going to bring inflation back down to the 2% target range. The board does need to be confident that inflation is moving sustainably towards target, and it will do what is necessary to achieve that outcome.
Now, just remember, folks, the RBA is at 4.35%, and that's significantly below several other central banks, including the Bank of England, which held rates on Thursday at 5.25%. Despite inflation falling to 2% last month, that may be temporary. The Bank of Canada, which cut rates by 0.25% last time to 4.75%, and New Zealand's Reserve Bank holding rates at 5.5%, despite driving the economy there into recession. Which does beg the question, has the RBA done enough on rates to squeeze inflation out of the economy in Australia, despite being lower than peers? Mainly because in Australia, a greater proportion of mortgages are linked to variable rates than other countries. In fact, economists are divided on this, with Leith still holding the view that the next cut will be down as unemployment rises. But writing on Monday before the RBA decided to hold rates on Tuesday, economist Warren Hogan, who is at the more bullish end of commentators on RBA rates wrote in the AFR that the flow of data since the last meeting in early May may make it a very close call to be holding off on further tightening. At best, underlying inflation has stabilised around 4% in 2024, and there is a risk that it could be drifting up. The April monthly inflation indicator surprised on the upside, he said. Partial data from business surveys highlights ongoing cost pressures and an ability to pass on some of those to final prices. The RBA governor would prefer to see two quarterly inflation reports to get a clear picture of the underlying inflation trend. He had one higher one in the first quarter, but of course, what happens ahead? So they will probably wait for the second quarter inflation report in late July, just ahead of the next policy meeting and forecast update. And we'll also get another employment report at that time. Last week's employment number for May was an eye-opener, though. Putting the drop in the unemployment rate to the side, it is the strength of employment growth that has been the most startling. Not only is employment growth accelerating in 2024, but a big part of the increase are in full-time jobs. Trend employment growth is now running at 40,000 a month, according to the ABS. And by the way, 40,000 will be more than enough to cover the migration growth that we've seen recently. In the latest RBA forecast, employment growth was projected to increase at about 10,000 a month in the June quarter. And over April and May, job creation is running at four times that pace. When trying to gauge the short-term momentum in the economy, it is employment numbers that matter, particularly when the economy is running right at or even above its capacity. Not only is employment growth running four times above what the RBA had expected just 6 weeks ago, it is more than double the 20-year average prior to the pandemic. We're certainly maintaining the employment gains from the pandemic. Indeed, we are supercharging them. The job vacancy data does not lie. The excess demand for labour in the Australian economy is nothing like we've seen, at least not since the vacancy series commenced back in 1979. So it's becoming increasingly clear that a critical reason why the economy is proving resilient to tighter monetary policy is this chronic shortage of labour. It's driving employment growth and supporting household income growth, and we're seeing similar outcomes overseas. Last week's strong employment numbers also highlighted Australia's productivity problem. Employment growth this year is running at about 3% annualised, but real economic growth is just 1%. The latest national account showed that productivity was flat in the first quarter, and the employment outcomes in April and May suggest it got worse in the second quarter. So in the absence of productivity growth, cost pressures in the economy end up as inflation. Cost pressures remain elevated, and it is more than just wages growth. Non-wage labour costs, insurance, energy, and raw materials are all part of the mix. And it's not a lack of demand that is keeping Australian economic growth at 1%. It's the supply side of the economy that is the constraint. Trying to put demand into an economy operating at its capacity simply doesn't work. It will create inflation. The slowdown in economic activity in the last 2 years is almost entirely the result of the severe pressure on household real disposable incomes from inflation, a higher tax burden, and higher interest rates. But higher interest rates are only part of the problem. It's inflation and the associated bracket creep that is doing the real damage. The forces holding the economy back over the past 2 years will ease, though, over the coming financial year, as Australian governments inject tens of billions of dollars into household disposable income with tax cuts and cost of living relief. Household real disposable incomes are about to jump sharply higher in 24-25 after 2 years of contraction. Now, the RBA can continue to wait for inflation to come down. The problem with that strategy is that the longer the inflation is in the economy, the harder it is to get it out again. The narrow path is still attainable, but it increasingly looks like we will need to get rates up closer to 5% to stay on it. And just to develop that point further, interestingly, in an earlier piece, Hogan also highlighted that the recent federal budget will not help bring inflation down. as he says. When setting monetary policy, the RBA will look through temporary factors impacting prices to understand the underlying trend for inflation within the economy. Government policy measures are the first thing they take out of the calculation, quickly followed by volatile energy and food prices. The real issue for the inflation outlook is the extent to which changes in fiscal policy will impact demand in the economy over the year ahead. On this front, we have two major measures that will boost household disposable incomes and domestic demand. The revamped Stage 3 income tax cuts will inject around $25 billion into household budgets in the year 24 to 25. Treasury estimates this will boost real household disposable income by about 1%, but it could be a little more. Critically, the income tax cuts remove one of the key factors that were squeezing household budgets over the past 2 years, bracket creep. Treasury estimates that bracket creep knocked about $18 billion out of household incomes in 22 to 23, another $25 billion in the current financial year. So Hogan thinks that bracket creep has been as important as higher interest rates in driving the widespread consumer belt tightening of the past 2 years. The economic slowdown that we've seen thus far has been almost entirely driven by weakness in consumer spending. Business investment, government spending, and exports are all holding up. Indeed, real government spending is expected to rise 4.2% in the current financial year and a further 3.4% in the year 24 to 25. So by removing the effects of bracket creep on household disposable incomes, the government is effectively removing one of the main restraining factors on domestic demand over the past 2 years. And real household disposable income is forecast to grow 3.5% in the year 24 to 25. That's the strongest in a decade outside of the pandemic. Unless consumers decide to save this extra income, we should be expecting some improvement in consumption growth. Now, the RBA says that income tax cuts are factored into their forecasts. The reality is that this economy has been hard to forecast based on normal cyclical models. Major demographic changes and the remnants of the pandemic stimulus are indeed complicating the picture. So we can't be sure how much of those tax cuts will affect demand in the economy over the year ahead. We'll have to wait and see. The budget also contained $10 billion worth of new policy spending in 24 to 25, most of which is aimed at providing cost of living relief to households. If household budgets are under pressure, we should expect much of this to be spent. In fact, the latest data shows that we are spending around 97 cents of every dollar we earn. It is a bold assumption to think that we will suddenly ramp up our saving behavior. So these new spending measures are genuinely new money for the economy. The cost of living relief is not being funded by upside surprises to the government revenues, as we've seen so many times in the past. And so the $10 billion of new spending is going to push the deficit from $18 billion to $28 billion. So the government is borrowing money in the capital markets to fund the cost of living relief. Therefore, the economy is finally balanced as we enter the new financial year. Domestically generated inflation is indeed proving stubborn, as we've been seeing all around the world. Domestic demand needs to remain soft right through 2024 to ensure a return to price stability. So despite the best efforts from some commentators, the truth is this budget won't be a catalyst for rate cuts, and it probably won't be enough to stop the RBA tapping on the brakes a couple more times this year. So the bottom line is, given everything that we know now, a 5% cash rate ahead is more than just a probability. Some would say it's all but a certainty. Well, we'll wait and see. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.